Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
You never think a $15 toy store board could change your life. You never think a candlelit game with your best friends could open a door you'll never be able to shut. But for her, that's exactly what happened. She remembers the night in snapshots, the soft hiss of the heater trying to warm the old apartment, the thin, vanilla-scented candle that dripped wax down Kathy's chipped nightstand, the rustle of a board game box pulled from a shopping bag. The Ouija board was glossy, its letters curling in decorative black script, the plastic planchette surprisingly light under their fingertips. At 13, she was the skeptic of the trio. She had always been a little sensitive, quick to feel a room's mood, prone to vivid dreams. But she had no respect for the idea that a mass-produced board could summon anything. If spirits were real, she'd teased, why would they hang around a piece of cardboard you can buy next to Monopoly? If she could warn that younger self now, she says, she wouldn't argue. She'd simply blow out the candle, shove the board back in the box, and tell the girls to leave the room before anything answered. But that night in Kathy's lilac-painted bedroom with music posters peeling at the corners and the sweet smell of vanilla wax mixing with the dusty scent of the heater, it felt like harmless fun. "Let's see if anyone's here," Kathy whispered, giggling as she shifted cross-legged on the carpet. The third girl, a neighbor from downstairs, smirked and said, "Yeah, let's ask the ghosts." They all leaned in, fingertips resting on the plastic pointer. "Is anyone with us?" Kathy asked. For a moment, nothing. Then, slowly, the planchette dragged toward yes. The three girls gasped, then burst into nervous laughter. "Someone's pushing it," the skeptic accused. "I'm not," Kathy said quickly. "Must be you," the neighbor teased back. The questions that followed were predictable. "What's your name? How old are you? How did you die?" The answers spelled out names they didn't recognize. Tom, Lily, Grace, and vague stories about carriage accidents or sickness. For the first few weeks, that's all it was, a novelty they brought out on Saturday nights, laughing too loudly at every flicker of the candle's flame. But she started to notice something odd. The later it got, the heavier the air felt in that bedroom. The candle would gutter sideways, even when the windows were closed. Their laughter sometimes sounded forced, as though all three sensed something was listening from just beyond the circle of light. Then, one chilly evening in early spring, the planchette began to move with a different kind of weight. Slower, more deliberate, as if the thing on the other side were writing instead of drifting. Letter by letter, it spelled S-A-M. Kathy read it out loud. "Sam." "Okay. Hi, Sam. Where are you from?" The three girls shared an amused glance. The pointer hesitated, then slid again. H-E-L-L. A small, startled laugh bubbled out of the skeptic before she could stop it. "Oh, come on," she said, rolling her eyes. But the candle flame leaned hard to one side as if brushed by an invisible gust. The temperature in the room seemed to dip. They could almost see their breath fog in the glow. Kathy's voice wavered. "What do you want, Sam?" The planchette shot across the board with sudden force. Y-O-U. She yanked her fingers back as if it had burned her. "Enough," she said sharply. And, breaking the unspoken rule never to force the pointer, she shoved it straight to goodbye herself. The room stayed silent except for the faint rattle of the heater. "That was the night," she says. The air in the apartment changed. The days that followed were full of small disturbances that never felt small in the moment. Kathy's old beige desktop computer, as the kind that whined and glowed faint green when it powered up, started turning on by itself even when no one was near the keyboard. A closed bedroom door would be found wide open after they stepped out for snacks. Other times a door would slam so hard the frames rattled. A neat stack of magazines on the dresser slid off and fanned across the carpet without anyone touching it. You could chalk it up to drafts, to hinges, and a decades-old building, But every time something happened, she felt that same oppressive weight in her chest that she'd felt the night Sam first answered. They stashed the board in the closet for a few weeks, trying to forget about it. When they finally brought it out again, a new presence appeared. She called herself Anna. Unlike Sam, Anna felt soft at first. Her answers spelled out slowly, almost politely. When asked what she wanted, Anna's letters formed B-E-W-I-T-H-H-E-R. At 13, that sounded almost comforting, like a lonely spirit seeking friendship. But the warmth didn't last. One night, Kathy asked, "Anna, why do you want her so much?" The pointer glided over the letters K-I-N-G. "King?" "What's that supposed to mean?" the skeptic asked, frowning. The planchette crept again, each letter deliberate. H-E-L-L. Kathy laughed too loudly, trying to chase the tension from the room. "Maybe you're gonna be the king of hell when you die," she joked. The pointer slid sharply to yes. Nobody laughed after that. Even years later, she would remember the stone-cold feeling in her gut at that moment. Not that she believed the claim, but it felt like they'd been given a threat disguised as a prophecy. Anna's tone shifted after that night. She declared that the girl belonged to her. She warned that if Kathy came between them, she'd be harmed. She urged the skeptic to use the board alone, a suggestion that sent a ripple of unease through the group. Everyone had heard that was the one thing you should never do. That was enough for Kathy. She pushed back from the board and swore she'd never play again. But the girl who had started it all didn't quit. By then, the board had become something more than a game. Part fascination, part dread, an open line she couldn't quite bring herself to hang up. A humid summer evening found her carrying a different board to a new friend's house, Veronica's. Convincing herself that a fresh board in a different living room meant starting over. For the first hour, the session was almost boring. Light questions, half-serious laughter. Then, like the hush before a thunderstorm, the air in the room thickened. The candle flame trembled even though no breeze stirred the curtains. A faint prickling climbed her arms. Something made her turn her head toward the unlit hallway that led to the front door. That's when she saw it. A figure, female, thin, faintly luminous, hovered a few inches above the floorboards, silent as a held breath. For the first time in her life, she saw a presence, instead of only sensing it. For a few stunned seconds, she felt no fear at all. Just a disbelieving awe, as if the proof she'd secretly wanted had finally stepped out of the shadows to meet her. She stared so long she didn't hear Veronica saying her name until a tap on her arm made her flinch. "You see her, don't you?" Veronica whispered, eyes wide. "She says you two are looking at each other." The words jolted her back into herself. When she finally dragged her eyes back to the board, the planchette was already sliding beneath their fingers. Letter by letter, it spelled the name she had hoped never to see again. A-N-N-A. Anna had followed her. The name on the board felt heavier now, as if each letter pressed into the cardboard like a warning carved in wood. "King!" The planchette slid again, the letters deliberate and patient. Then came the line that seemed to chill the candlelight itself. "I will always be with you," as her breath caught. The hallway beyond the board looked darker than it had a minute ago, as if the faintly glowing figure at the far end had drawn the shadows closer, pulling them around her like a veil. "I'm not doing this," she whispered, voice trembling. Don't freak out," Veronica said, eyes darting from the hallway to the board. "Just say goodbye." But she couldn't make herself lean forward again. Instead, she shoved her chair back. The wooden legs scraped against the linoleum with a sound that set her teeth on edge. "I'm done. I mean it," she said, louder this time, though her voice cracked halfway through the words. Rather than pass the dark hallway where the apparition waited, she turned and bolted for the kitchen door, nearly knocking over the candle as she went. She tore out into the yard, the grass wet and cool under her socks, the night air carrying the metallic smell of rain that hadn't yet fallen. She hopped the back fence, the splintered wood scraping her palms, and cut through a neighbor's yard to reach the street. All the way home, she felt as though the space just behind her shoulder was occupied, as if something unseen were keeping pace in the dark. That was the last time she ever stepped foot inside Veronica's house after sunset. For weeks, she avoided the board. She stuffed it deep into her closet, wedged behind a stack of school notebooks and an old shoebox of photos. She told herself that was it. The line was drawn, but obsession has a way of finding its cracks. In class, she caught herself wondering if Anna would appear again if she asked. At night, she dreamed of the planchette gliding across the alphabet on its own, spelling words she couldn't quite read. By 14, she had slipped back into using the board, not as often as before, but often enough that the unease never quite faded. She kept the sessions quiet, never again inviting Kathy or Veronica. If the board spelled A-N-N-A, she'd pack it up at once, yet somehow that didn't stop her from trying again. The following week, the real break came just before her 17th birthday. College applications were out, and the dream of leaving the old apartment behind felt close enough to touch. One rainy Saturday, she finally dragged the board out from the back of the closet, wrapped it in an old towel, and carried it up the narrow, pull-down ladder to the attic of her parents' house. She shoved it under a stack of dusty Christmas decorations, his boxes of tangled lights and a crumpled wreath, then climbed down and shut the attic door with a finality that felt almost ceremonial. "This is the last time," she whispered to herself. For a while, she believed it. The first months of college felt like a new life. The dorm was all cinder block walls painted eggshell white, the air thick with the smell of disinfectant and cheap pizza from the student union. Her roommate had never heard the stories about the board. She laughed off any mention of ghosts. She settled into the rhythm of late-night study sessions, vending machine dinners, and the steady hum of fluorescent lights. But the quiet hours after midnight were harder. Sometimes she woke with the feeling that someone had just been sitting at the edge of her bed, the mattress faintly indented as though a body had shifted off it only seconds earlier. Other times, she'd dream of whispers so close to her ear they startled her awake, heart pounding, to a room that looked as bland and empty as ever. She told herself it was stress, that her brain was conjuring shadows to fill the silence. She didn't touch another Ouija board again after 17, but the sensation of being watched, of being kept track of, never quite left. Over the next decade, she moved through 3 cities and half a dozen apartments. Some places were better than others, but none ever felt completely free of that lingering presence. A corner of a room that stayed colder than the rest. The briefest glimpse of movement at the edge of her vision. A dream so vivid, she woke convinced that someone had stood beside her pillow, leaning close, waiting for her eyes to open. She learned to ignore it as best she could, building a life around the uneasy truth that whatever had once been invited might never really have left. Then, a little over a year ago, she moved into a single-story rental on a quiet street, a small desert-edge house with pale stucco walls and the smell of fresh paint still clinging to the hallway. It had no history she could dig up, no tragedies in the local news archives. For the first 4 months, it was blissfully ordinary. She slept deeply, sometimes even forgetting the weight she'd carried for so long. No flickering lights, no cold spots, no footsteps in the night. For the first time in more than a decade, she believed she'd finally outrun it all. That illusion cracked on an autumn evening. She was brushing her teeth before bed when she noticed something in the mirror. Her reflection twitched, a tiny flinch, half a second before she moved. The hair at the nape of her neck prickled. She lowered the toothbrush slowly, staring at herself in the glass. Nothing moved again. But the hallway behind her in the reflection looked subtly different, as if the shadows there had grown thicker. A scent drifted past her then. Faint, sweet, unmistakable. Dried roses left too long in a closed box, and with that came the immediate, bone-deep certainty, Anna. She says it wasn't a guess, it was recognition. The way you can tell who's on the other end of the phone after only a single word. Anna had always carried a presence she could feel before the board ever spelled a name. A signature, she calls it, like an emotional fingerprint. And Anna wasn't alone. That winter, the small house grew uneasy. Some nights, she woke to the creak of a floorboard near the bedroom door, deliberate, as though someone were shifting their weight to lean closer. Once, she felt the mattress dip under the invisible weight of a seated figure. She held still, barely breathing, until it lifted again. On quieter nights, there was only the sense of being observed, that faint pressure at the back of her neck, the subtle awareness of eyes in the dark. Friends suggested she move, but she only shook her head. By now, she was convinced it wasn't the houses that were haunted. It was her. Often, she stayed up scrolling her phone just to keep the blue-white glow on in the hallway. More than once, she caught herself staring at that hallway, half expecting to see a pale figure hovering inches above the floorboards again, the way she had the night at Veronica's house so many years earlier. Sometimes in the half-sleep of early morning, she thought of Sam, the first name the board had ever given her. She hadn't sensed him in years, yet she'd wake some nights with his name echoing in her thoughts, as if he were still there, waiting somewhere behind Anna. One rain-slick December night, she sat curled up on the sofa, the television dark, the house lit only by the cool glow of her phone screen. The heater ticked softly in the corner. From the hallway came the slow creak of a single step on the old floorboards. She froze, listening. No more footsteps came. Only the faint sweetness of that rose-like scent drifting in again. A scent that now felt as much a warning as a welcome. She set her phone face down and stared at the dark hallway until her eyes watered. The silence stretched on, heavy and patient. She doesn't call herself cursed, but she admits there are nights she wishes she could step backward in time. Back to that lilac-painted bedroom at 13, the vanilla candle, Kathy's laugh, the innocent question asked in a half-whisper over the glossy new board, "Is anyone here with us?" She wonders if that was the true beginning. If the mistake wasn't laying her fingers on the planchette, but answering back when something in the dark finally said hello. For years, she's replayed the same question in her mind. Did that door really open because of a board game, or had it always been open inside her, just waiting for the right invitation? When she thinks back to being 13, she remembers how cheap the Ouija board felt under her fingers. Glossy cardboard, a hollow plastic planchette that rattled if you shook it, a toy. The packaging even promised fun for the whole family. She has since learned the Ouija's story, how it was patented in the late 1800s as a parlor novelty, how in the decades that followed people blamed it for everything from seances gone wrong to full-blown possessions. But that night in Kathy's room, none of that history mattered. It was just a dare, a question asked in candlelight. She never imagined that what answered would still be with her as an adult. She can chart her life by the places she's lived and the shadows that came with her. Each new apartment, a promise of relief, each one eventually heavy with the same presence. There was the little basement studio near the college campus where her keys once slid off the counter in the middle of the night, clattering loud enough to wake her. There was the second floor walk-up with the crooked hallway mirror that sometimes showed a figure standing just behind her shoulder. In one city apartment, she often woke at 3:17 a.m. exactly. Not with a noise, but with the distinct sense that someone had been bending over her bed, whispering her name into her dreams. She learned to live with it, the way people in train-side houses learn to sleep through the whistle, never comfortable but familiar. The Palmdale rental was supposed to be her fresh start. The desert air smelled of creosote and asphalt after the first rain. The house itself still held the scent of fresh paint. She filled the rooms with ordinary things, secondhand bookshelves, a chipped coffee table, a thrift store sofa upholstered in sunflower print. For the first 4 months, she felt almost normal. She remembers thinking, maybe the board stayed in the attic where I left it. Maybe Anna stayed with it. Then came the night of the mirror. The tiny bathroom was bright with the hum of its single fluorescent bulb. She was brushing her teeth when her own reflection twitched, a fractional flinch like a heartbeat caught on film. The toothbrush clattered into the sink as she stepped back, staring at herself. The hallway behind her in the mirror seemed darker than it had when she'd flipped the light on. And then that scent, faint, sweet, unmistakable, drifted in. The smell of dried roses pressed in an old book. Recognition struck as sharp as a voice in her ear. Anna. In the months that followed, she began to sense others as well. Shapes without names, impressions without faces. Some nights the mattress dipped as if someone small had perched at the edge, patient and silent. Other nights the air at the foot of her bed seemed to tighten, like a presence leaning in close but never quite touching. Once in the half-light before dawn she heard what sounded like a child's breathy laugh, so soft she thought she'd imagined it until the bedside lamp flickered at the same instant. She stopped trying to explain any of it to friends. Their well-meant suggestions, move again, call a priest, burn sage, felt naive. By then she was convinced the haunting wasn't tied to walls or objects. It was tied to her. On restless nights, she sometimes scrolls news articles about Ouija legends. Stories of soldiers in the First World War spelling out messages to sweethearts back home. Of seances in the spiritualist era. Of teenagers like her who thought they were just playing a game until the answers grew too personal. The comment sections are full of skeptics blaming the ideomotor effect, and she almost envies them that certainty. She thinks about Sam, the first name the board ever gave her, the one who claimed to be in hell. She hasn't sensed him in years, but there are nights she still wakes from dreams with the echo of that first threat. The planchette spelling Y-O-U, the candle flame bending as if trying to flee. More often, her thoughts return to Anna. Anna, who once sounded shy and almost tender, who spelled B-E with her like a promise, then called her king and claimed her as her own. Anna, who urged her to play alone. Anna, whose presence carries that faint signature of dried rose perfume even now. She remembers a recent night in winter, the house silent except for the soft ticking of the heater. She'd been reading on the sofa until the words on the page blurred and her eyes began to close. Somewhere down the hall came the slow creak of a single footstep on the hardwood floor. It wasn't the pop of the house settling. It was a step, measured and deliberate. She didn't move, just listened. Another creak, closer this time. Then nothing. The heater clicked off. In the sudden hush, she caught that rose scent again. Faint but certain. She set her book aside and waited, heart hammering against her ribs, staring at the dark hallway until the shadows seemed to shift on their own. Nothing emerged, but the sense of being watched lingered until dawn. She tells this story now not as a plea for belief. Most people, she knows, will assume it's sleep paralysis, faulty wiring, suggestion. But she has lived with it too long to doubt her own senses. If I could go back, she says, I wouldn't just walk away from the board. I'd walk out of the room before we ever lit that candle. She wonders sometimes if the real mistake wasn't touching the planchette at 13, but answering the first time something unseen pushed it to hello. The part that unsettles her most isn't the footsteps or the perfume-like scent or even the nights she swears someone pressed a cool palm to her cheek. It's the thought that whatever crossed that threshold with her all those years ago never needed the board at all, that the board was only the key that let it recognize her. And once recognized, it never lost her again. The story ends as it began, in the quiet of an ordinary room. Late at night, she sometimes turns the TV off and sits in the dim light of her phone screen, scrolling just to stay awake. Every creak of the house makes her glance at the hallway. Sometimes she imagines she hears the faint scratch of a planchette moving against cardboard, letter by letter, spelling her name. She hasn't owned a board in years. But some nights she wonders if the conversation that started in Kathy's bedroom never actually ended. If Anna is still spelling out words in the dark, unseen, waiting for her to respond. Some hauntings cling to walls. Some hide in objects. And some, the worst of them, cling to the person bold enough to ask the wrong question. For her, the door wasn't a house or an antique mirror. It was a board sold in a toy aisle. 2 decades later, the echo on the other side still hasn't stopped whispering. I'm still here.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.